1885, the Imperial Russian Army, carried by the momentum of its conquests in Transcaspia, what is now Turkmenistan, had actually invaded what was generally regarded as Afghan territory, and particularly a place called Kushka. And this move made the British administration in India extremely worried. Of course, there were those in Simla, in particular, who saw the Russian advance into Central Asia as posing a serious threat to the British Raj in India. They suspected the Russians of having evil intentions to kick the British out of India. And the two countries very nearly came to war about this particular issue. Fortunately, the Russians had a very intelligent ambassador in London called Stahl, who, as it were, drew the sting out of the particular problem and negotiated a peaceful settlement to this dispute, suggesting the formation of the so-called Pamir Boundary Commission between Russia and Britain, which would delineate the frontier between what was then the southernmost limit of Tsarist Russian territory and Afghanistan, so that further Russian advances would be prevented. This boundary had stretches which were particularly tricky. The terrain was extremely mountainous, and particularly in the higher areas of the Pamirs, really uncharted. A number of explorers had been in there, but the surveying equipment was not very sophisticated. It is always said that the Russians started on the wrong foot by using a map which was upside down anyway, so there were some disagreements about the location of different physical features, but in the end that was sorted out. And in fact a very amicable series of negotiations took place, which basically fixed the frontier along the Oxus River, the Amu Darya, or the Panj, or Pianj, as it's called, three different names. There was a problem, two problems with this. One was with regard to the river itself, and the other was what to do when you get higher than the river. With regard to the river itself, one of the problems arose from the fact that the ruler of Afghanistan, Amir Rahman Khan, had invaded and annexed territory to the north of the Oxus on the basis that that was territory which had previously been ruled by the Khan of Badakhshan, and particularly Shugnan in what is now Tajikistan belonged to him. This annexation was actually in violation of an earlier agreement between the Russians and the British in 1873, the so-called Grenville-Gorchakov agreement between two foreign ministers at the time, which implicitly recognized the Oxus as being the limit of Afghanistan and Russia. So the British started, as it were, a slight disadvantage because the Emir of Afghanistan had behaved in what both Russia and Britain admitted was an illegal fashion. There was also a difference of approach between the Russian approach and the British approach, and the Russians naturally were looking for physical features as being the natural point where a frontier might lie or be drawn, like a mountain range or in this case a river. The British said, well, that's all very well, we might accept that the Oxus is a frontier between Russia and Afghanistan, but there are peoples who straddle the Oxus, same tribes, same clans, living on both sides of the Oxus, and it's a pity to separate them, particularly various Tajik groups. And after a number of discussions about this, the British conceded the point, basically, and the Oxus was agreed as the frontier. The question then arose, the second question was what to do once you get above the source of the Oxus. The Oxus, once you get into the Pamirs, splits into two. That is to say, in reverse, there are two main tributaries into what becomes the Oxus. The northern one springs from a lake, which at the time, rather engagingly, was called Lake Victoria, a name accepted, interestingly, by the Russian government as well as being imposed by the British government. The southern of those two tributaries ran along a valley called the Wahan Valley. And in the end, it was agreed that the frontier should run along the mountain range separating those two tributaries, up into the, well, which a mountain range which is the southern limit of the Little Pamirs, as they're called, leaving the more southerly of the two tributaries inside a narrow corridor of land which would be left as part of Afghanistan. And this suited both sides quite well because it provided a sort of corridor between Russia, Russian territory, and British territory, which basically ended in Chitral, in what is now Pakistan, and Hunza and Gilgit, that area of northern Pakistan, which both sides agreed belonged to British rule in India, thus creating a buffer state. During the Soviet period, the frontier was looked after by the Soviet border guards, who, in the last couple of decades, at least, of the Soviet Union, came under KGB, and therefore very much under Soviet control, directed from Moscow. When the Soviet Union was formed, that's after the Civil War, which followed the Bolshevik Revolution, the frontier between Tajikistan and Afghanistan remained relatively porous, simply because it was extremely remote and difficult to patrol, and also because the inhabitants of Badakhshan in particular, of mountainous Badakhshan, were Ismailis, and indeed still are, and maintained difficult but regular contact with the Aga Khan, who was then resident in India, in British India, in Bombay. And there was quite a lot of coming and going between the Aga Khan's headquarters in Bombay and the Pamirs right through the 1920s, really until the middle of the 1930s, when the Soviets finally closed the frontier and contacts ceased. Throughout the Second World War, contacts across the frontier were very closely controlled, and following the Second World War, the frontier was also extremely carefully controlled, watchtowers and ploughed strips and so on, bearing in mind that until you got really high into the mountains, the frontier was the river, the Amudarya, the Oxus, the Pianj. Once the Soviet Union collapsed, responsibility for patrolling the frontier was in the hands of the Russian border guards, by then Russian rather than Soviet. And that fact was enshrined in an agreement of 1993 which recognized the Russians' presence guarding the frontier. However, by then there was already a growing feeling in official Tajik government circles that this was an anomaly and that Tajikistan should actually take over responsibility for guarding its own frontiers, particularly as both the Uzbeks and the Turkmen had moved to take over responsibility for their own frontiers, albeit allowing those Russians who were serving in the frontier troops to stay behind, but under, as it were, Uzbek and Turkmen flags rather than under the Russian flag. And it has to be said that even when the Russians were officially responsible for guarding the Tajik frontier with Afghanistan, 95 or more percent of the soldiery were Tajiks, and about 93% of the officers were Russians. As I say, there was a growing feeling in Dushanbe that this anomaly ought to be changed, and finally, in 2004, steps were taken to hand over responsibility to the Tajik government. The Russians withdrew in stages. They withdrew first from the frontier with China, and then in October 2004, President Putin visited Dushanbe and an agreement was signed which gave the Tajiks responsibility for their border guards. In exchange, the Tajik government offered the Russians a military base, and in addition, the Russians share an air base in a town called Aini with India, which also has an air force presence in Tajikistan. After that agreement, the Tajiks took over responsibility for guarding the frontier. This caused a certain amount of alarm, not only in Russia, but also in the West, particularly in the United States, an alarm which felt that perhaps the Tajiks didn't have the technical know-how, or equipment indeed, for guarding what was a very complicated frontier, a very difficult terrain, and also perhaps they didn't have the experience either. Interestingly, both the United States and the Russians reacted by offering the Tajik border guards training and technical facilities in order to improve their capabilities. So, to put it briefly and to summarize, the border is now guarded by Tajik border troops, who are being trained by both Americans and Russians. There are two main concerns, really. One is to protect the border against what are regarded in both Tajikistan and Russia, and indeed the United States, as political undesirables like Islamic terrorists, and against narcotic smuggling in particular. Since the collapse of the Soviet Union, it might have been expected that everything would change, and a great deal did change once Tajikistan became an independent state. However, since the collapse of the Soviet Union, the relationship between Tajikistan and Afghanistan has been profoundly affected by different factors. The first of which was the Tajik Civil War, which really broke out within a year and a bit after the collapse of the Soviet Union, second half of 1992, and continued really for 5 years. An extremely bloody and unpleasant civil war, like most civil wars, which resulted in the flight of some 50,000 or more refugees across the river into northern Afghanistan. So here we go again. We have an unstable situation in the north of the Pamirs, that's in Tajikistan, and people flee into Afghanistan, take refuge there. And they establish themselves in camps in northern Afghanistan, where they were supported by the hospitality, if you like, of the Afghans, the UNHCR, which gave them a lot of help, and where they came into contact with the forces led by Ahmad Shah Massoud, also a Tajik. And I think it's certainly likely that quite a lot of the Islamic influence, which was later seen in the war when the United Tajik Opposition fought against the more pro-secular, like pro-Soviet in mentality, coalition on the government side, quite a lot of the inspiration came from Massoud and his circle, who have been seen in the West as in Tajikistan as good guys, because they've been fighting the Soviets, but for all that were very pious and convinced Muslims, and saw the Muslim way of Islamic way of life as being the right solution, and this influence I think was quite strong on what was later to become the UTO, the United Tajik Opposition. Massoud, of course, was careful not to get too overtly involved, because he was worried about retaliation and problems coming from the north, particularly as he had to face serious threats from the south. And this brings me to the second factor which influenced Tajik-Afghan relations, and that is the Afghan Civil War. Tajik Civil War on the one hand, and now you come to the Afghan Civil War and general instability in Afghanistan. And when I say the Afghan Civil War, I mean really this, first of all, the civil war which erupted once the Soviets left, and where you had the Tajiks, based on the Panjshir Valley, using their old tactics and their old fortress in the Panjshir Valley to protect themselves against, first of all, the likes of Qutbuddin Hekmatyar and other rivals for power in Kabul, but then subsequently, of course, against the Taliban regime. And it was Ahmad Shah Massoud, again, who, as he had successfully resisted the Soviets, also successfully resisted the Taliban. And the only part of Afghanistan which remained unconquered by the Taliban right up to 2001, when the Americans invaded, was the extreme northeast corner of Balakshan, the Panjshir Valley, and so on. Although the Taliban did get as far as capturing Talakhan in Tahar province, which is very close to Balakshan. Indeed, had 9/11 not happened, it's a matter of speculation as to whether the Taliban, in fact, would in the end have succeeded in outflanking the Panjshir Valley by coming in from the north and getting hold of Faizabad and Balakshah. That's a matter of speculation. No one knows whether that would have happened or not. But all of that did have a profound influence on Tajik official and popular attitudes towards Afghanistan, a very unstable Afghanistan, which was prey to civil war for many years. And naturally, the official sympathy tended to be with Ahmad Shah Massoud and his resistance to the Taliban, because the Taliban's message didn't really appeal to the Tajiks in any way at all. First of all, even for people like the Islamic Revival Party, the Nehzat in Tajikistan, the Taliban message wasn't particularly attractive. Their very extreme form of Islam was even for them rather over the top. And secondly, it was a Pashtun-dominated movement which didn't particularly appeal to Tajiks any more than it did to Afghan Tajiks. So the natural sympathy lay with Ahmad Shah Massoud and his forces. And the residual government of Afghanistan, which was still the officially recognized government of Afghanistan in the United Nations, had an embassy in Dushanbe, which represented, if you like, Ahmad Shah Massoud and President Rabbani, who were, as it were, coalition at the time. And so relations between Tajikistan and that remaining unconquered bit of non-Taliban Afghanistan were quite close, and support went through to Massoud and his Tajik forces in their resistance against the Taliban. As is well known, Afghanistan is now producing something like 70% of all the opium in the world, and one of the main routes for the smuggling of opium and its derivatives, mainly heroin, which is now largely refined inside Afghanistan in small laboratories inside Afghanistan. The main route, one of the main routes, is north through Tajikistan and then Kyrgyzstan and beyond through Russia into Western Europe and so on. And of course, it has to cross the Oxus, across the Amudarya. And that is a major problem for the Tajik border guards, as they now are, and was a major problem for the Russian border guards when they were in control. Once again, one heard stories about Russian helicopters being used for heroin smuggling, as I have no doubt we will also hear stories about Tajik helicopters being used. And indeed, there was one particularly naughty story that the main force behind the decision to transfer responsibility for the border guards from the relatively efficient Russians to the relatively inefficient Tajiks was those parties in the Tajik government who were interested in making money out of an easier transit for smuggled narcotics across the frontier. Who knows whether such thing is true or not. But anyway, that is a story which did the rounds. And there's no doubt, whatever the truth or otherwise of such stories, that the trade in heroin in particular brings colossal wealth to those people who are involved in it, and is a very malign influence on society because it increases the wealth discrepancies between different groups within society. Those who are involved in drugs trade become immeasurably richer than those who are not. It has also led to a very considerable increase in use of narcotics in Tajikistan and indeed in other Soviet republics, but talking about Tajikistan. The Tajiks point to the fact that their border guards and the Russians before them intercepted huge quantities of opium and heroin, and I think the largest hauls of heroin intercepted in the world have been on that frontier. But it seems regrettably likely that that record reflects rather a huge quantity of overall quantity of narcotics crossing the frontier out of Afghanistan into the wider world than it reflects the efficiency of the Tajik border guards. Enormous quantities of narcotics, opiates, are moving out of Afghanistan northwards. And that clearly has numerous effects on the relationship between the Tajiks and the Afghans. Clearly, for those who are involved in the drugs trade, this leads to close cooperation between the Tajiks and the Afghans. For those who are trying to stop the drugs trade, it can lead to close cooperation with their people, the other side, their opposite numbers, the other side in Afghanistan, outside the frontier in Afghanistan. It can also lead to greater tension if one or the other side fails in its endeavors, or tension with those who are smuggling. There's a whole range of influences which arise from this extremely profitable illegal trade in opiates. And a particular factor in all of this is the fact that the cultivation of poppies in Badakhshan, in Afghan Badakhshan, has increased, I think, in the last few years, faster than any other province in Afghanistan. So, whereas Badakhshan before was not producing a large number of poppies, now it is.
That's bang next to Tajikistan.
Another factor which has influenced Afghan-Tajik relations has been the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, which was responsible for a number of attacks and incursions into Uzbek territory, using Tajik territory. Now, the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan was given support and house room, if you like, by the Taliban government in Afghanistan. But, of course, in order to get to its target, it had to cross Tajikistan territory. Did the Taliban government support the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan? I think there's little doubt but that it did, and one pointer in that direction is the presence of a fair number of IMU fighters in Kunduz during the American-led campaign against the Taliban government, and indeed the probable death of Juman Aman Ghani, the head of the IMU in Kunduz when it was bombed by the Americans. So there were quite a lot of IMU fighters in Kunduz even after 9/11 and the war which followed 9/11. But before that, the incursions into Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan by the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, which launched bomb attacks and kidnappings, do seem to have come from a base in the Tajik Mountains, executed by fighters who had come over from Afghanistan and who, when the going got tough in Tajikistan, went back into Afghanistan. So there was that, if you like, relationship between the IMU based in the mountains of Tajikistan with some support from previous United Tajik opposition fighters, which complicates the relationship between Tajikistan and Afghanistan, bearing in mind the pressure which Tajikistan found itself under from Tashkent, from Uzbekistan, as a result of some of these attacks. One has to be a bit careful about all of this because the exact facts are rather unclear, but I think there's little doubt about that. The IMU did have bases in the mountains of Tajikistan with some support from certain elements in the Tajik government and non-government organizations, a society, if you like, possibly even at times, at least, benevolent negligence on the part of the Russians. And so all of that led to a complicated situation between Afghanistan and Tajikistan. Once 9/11 happened, President Rahmonov and the Tajik government were in a bit of a quandary. Obviously, they sympathized with Ahmad Shah Massoud, but they didn't quite know how to respond to American approaches and requests for use of airfields and other sort of logistical support. Because on the one hand, they wanted to resist the Taliban and support anything which was going to get rid of them. On the other hand, they didn't want to offend Moscow. But once President Putin had decided to support the American campaign against the Taliban, the way became clear for Rahmonov to follow suit. And although it was never stated quite as openly in Tajikistan as it was in Uzbekistan, the government did agree to give the Americans logistical support within certain clearly defined parameters. Even now, the instability in Afghanistan remains a factor to be reckoned with in Dushanbe's thinking, worried as the Tajik government always is about a possible flare-up of instability in Afghanistan and the possibility, of course, amongst other things, that it might lead to a refugee flow coming north across the frontier from Afghanistan into Tajikistan, a refugee flow for which a very poor country like Tajikistan probably not very well prepared. A very brief word about the future. Those all sound rather negative. We've got the instability of the Tajik civil war, instability of the Afghan civil war, general instability of Afghan politics, and now resurgent Taliban in the south. Goodness knows where that'll lead, and certainly worrying for the government in Dushanbe. The question of the Islamic movement to Uzbekistan, if you like, Islamic fighters using Tajik territory coming over from Afghanistan, now called, I think, the Islamic movement of Turkestan rather than Uzbekistan. They have a broader perspective of their aims. And finally, the question of narcotic smuggling. These are all rather negative factors which make one feel a bit pessimistic. On the other hand, I think it's fair to say the situation
along the frontier is better than it's ever been. There has been two or three bridges have been built across the Oxus River between the two countries, which never existed before, thus facilitating transport between the two countries and encouraging trade, not only in narcotics, you hope, but also in other things as well, and coming and going in contacts generally. The Russians and the Iranians are both now engaged in the construction of fairly massive hydroelectric power generation facilities in the south of Tajikistan, which promise to increase Tajikistan's ability to generate electricity phenomenally, and that is an increase in electrical generating power from which the Afghans in the north, in Badakhshan in particular, in that area, Tachar, are likely to benefit because the Tajiks will want to sell their electricity, and whereas they're likely to want to sell it to places like Afghanistan, places like Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan, perhaps, Afghanistan is bang next door and is likely to be able to buy it. So that is quite promising. In addition, the Russians, the Russian aluminium company, AL, has a project to build a aluminium smelter in the south of Tajikistan near to the Afghan border, the presence of which should impact upon the economic situation in the north of Afghanistan as well. So one way and another, the increasing prosperity of Tajikistan following the peaceful solution to the civil war and the relatively peaceful situation in the north of Afghanistan, which remains so far, in comparison with the south, relatively stable and relatively immune to resurgent Taliban activity, could give a promise of greater prosperity and greater cooperation between the two countries. So in some respects, with regard to that particular part of the world, I think there's good reason to be reasonably optimistic.